We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Learfield in the south end zone of Kyle Field, this is Studio 12.
'74-'72, here's your rivalry. Just tomahawked it home.
Olsen Magic doesn't live on in the Ray and Manning of the rivalry.
15 strikeouts. What a performance.
On the Texas A&M Sports Network, this is Studio 12.
Welcome to the Monday edition of Studio 12. Matt and Tyler with you here. We'll take you first around Aggieland. That is presented by Anko Insurance. A pretty nice weekend for Texas A&M Athletics. Had a lot of good results. One setback on the women's side, but man, they played their tails off in a loss to one of the best teams in the country. But Tyler, I think obviously any discussion of Aggie Athletics over the weekend has to start at Reed Arena in front of 12,600 people. Men's basketball, just a wire-to-wire beatdown of Georgia. And that gets me excited about the rest of the season for this team to do that to a team that you think you're better than. Just to, now, obviously, they had some players out. But yep. to go and just take care of business like that, that really got me excited.
Man, wasn't that fun watching them play, you know, just the hot start that they had, especially in the first 10 minutes, get that 16-point lead in the half, and then just never let their foot off the gas. And I think, Matt, for me, like, that was when we talked about on Friday's show was you never want to lose a home SEC game, but, like, especially to a Georgia team that was down two of their best players. Thought A&M defensively did a really good job of slowing down Georgia and what Mike White wanted to do in that game, but it really started with Wade Taylor. He was in control of that game the entire way. Henry Coleman was great early, but the way the Aggies played defense against a Georgia team who had really struggled on Tuesday night or Wednesday night against Auburn and wasn't really sure what we were going to see out of Georgia game plan wise, they just took it to him from the tip defensively and really suffocated him. And that's the one thing with that, when Reed is packed like that, with that was the third straight game with over 12,000 people in the building, the way A&M started the game defensively pressure wise, it just set up a big time recipe for success on Saturday night.
Yeah, and you know this, as you're making your way, it's a long way to go still. There's still basically half the SEC slate to play and a lot of tough opportunities there. If you want to set yourself up for something special during the season, the biggest thing to me that you have to do is protect your home court. Mm-hmm. And especially in a scenario where you are favored to win the game, doesn't mean you'll win all the games, but that's the thing that excited me the most. I'm like, if you're looking at it, now we're biased, obviously, but like, you know what? I think we're better than them. Oh, take out this guy and this guy. I absolutely think we're better than them. And really, from I think Georgia's last lead came less than 90 seconds into the game. They were up 2-1, and then game over. Just fed off the energy of the crowd, fed off of each other, put their foot on the gas pedal, and didn't let up. And that is exciting to me to see this team take that energy into what's going to be a wild month of February, I think, in hoops.
Yeah, I do too. And I think – for me, what I've noticed about this team, it's kind of going under the radar a little bit. Dave Neal and John Sumbull talked about it a little bit on the broadcast. From a turnover standpoint, this team's not giving the opponent a lot of chances to score off the turnover. And A&M, offensively, if you're Buzz Williams, you're going to love this. You had 30 made baskets. 22 of them had an assist. It was season high in assists for A&M, with Wade leading the way with 6. But there was just a lot of good things you can take from that one. I thought Henry finished at the rim really well. We struggled against that against Arkansas on Wednesday night. Just had some chances and just didn't fall our way. I thought the way Boots played in rhythm was really good. We'll be able to see Dexter Dennis hit some jump shots. That guy's hitting threes, and the way he guards in the front of that press, I mean, that's a big-time double-edged sword that you can use that can really inflict a lot of harm on your opponents. And then I thought Andre Gordon was really good. I think Andre played, 23 minutes. Didn't do a lot box score wise, but when we're able to put Boots, Andre, and Wade on the floor, have that ability to handle the basketball is really huge. And then Anderson and Garcia again, Andy as they call him. I mean, 8 boards. He's continued to come off the bench and provide a big rebounding presence. And that'll be big against a team at Auburn who, I'm not sure if you guys watched the game on Saturday when they played Knoxville. I watched a good bit of it because I thought there would be some points scored. Mm-hmm. The narrator, they were not. Tennessee ends up winning 46-43 over Auburn. And, Auburn would argue probably they should have had a chance to shoot 3 free throws at the end to maybe tie it up, but we'll leave that for the guys in Birmingham to figure out. But they are kind of feast or famine offensively right now. I think Johnny Broome is really good. They're forward. Jalen Williams has come on for him. Alan Flanagan's playing well, but some of their guards between whether it's Wendell Green or Zepp Jasper, Katie Johnson, they've just been kind of, I would say, up and down. And so I think for Tuesday night with kind of a small, quick turnaround, A&M's guards are going to be key defensively and being able to kind of lock down Auburn's guards. Those guys have played a lot of ball. Wendell Green's been at Auburn for, I think, 2 years now. Zeb Jasper is a transfer, same deal. Alan Flanagan's been there forever. They've got some good pieces, but it's an Auburn team that's kind of been up and down at times. And I think, especially what happened – 2 weeks ago on the plains, I wouldn't be shocked if that's in the back of their mind. So the Aggies got to be ready to go tomorrow night when the ball tips at 6 o'clock.
Absolutely, yeah, 6 o'clock. And by the way, folks, not a lot of home games left. I think 4 remain, one of which is already sold out or almost sold out in Alabama. I don't think right now you can get tickets for that final one. But Auburn, Arkansas, Tennessee, I believe, are the remaining ones other than that Alabama game. All of that available at 12man.com/bball tickets. Before we change up the sports here, you heard us ramble about this win over Georgia 82-57. Here's the head coach, Buzz Williams. I thought he had a really neat comment after the game, talking to Andrew Monaco and Dr. John Thornton about sort of the team staying within itself. And he talks about them being on their journey and not worried about the noise that this program is generating outside of what he calls Team Bus One.
The one thing that I want us to concentrate on, not you guys, but those in our program, we need to concentrate on our journey in the month of February. We can't get off track or be distracted by the opinion of others, by what this person said or what this post mentioned. We're in a position to be in a position, and the position that we're in is tomorrow we get to work and we need to be a little bit better, and I need to be great at that. As I mentioned to you, we don't need anxiousness. We need peace, and the peace needs to come from the process of our work, and we need to be completely absorbed in our work. And we don't need to shrink our circle. We need our circle to become a dot. And the dot are those that are on Team Bus One. And we're improving. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep the trajectory of our program on the floor, off the floor, in the film room, in the weight room, in 2 day before, in 1 day before, in shoot around. We need to continue being absorbed in our work and have an insatiable desire to try to figure out a way to be more efficient, to be more effective. And we can't get lost in the weeds of, well, so-and-so didn't play, and this team won that game, and if y'all do this, and if they did that, that's for people that are not on Team Bus One. Mm-hmm. We need to concentrate fully on our journey. And we're thankful that we started this month the right way. As I mentioned to you, I thought we handled Thursday really, really mature. I think that came to light on Friday. I thought we were really good in shoot around today. And there weren't a lot of hang-ups in what was going on from start to finish tonight.
All right, that's Buzz Williams from the postgame radio show. That is available, as always, on our podcast, 12man.com/podcast. You can get the entire postgame show for all the men's and women's games. So as you heard Tyler say, 6 o'clock Tuesday night, Auburn, the opponent. Once again, it's a Tuesday. It's early in the day. If you're coming to the game, try to plan accordingly. Try to get there a little early with parking and traffic, yep. 5 o'clock, school you'll, letting out, all that stuff.
You'll see some more enhanced traffic direction when you guys get over to really off Bush and hang out. If you're coming to hang a ride on the Olson, you'll see some more parking and transportation services guys out there directing traffic. Have your $5 ready to go if you're bringing cash. If you got a parking permit, be able to have that out and show it to the workers outside of Reed Arena. And then there's some ancillary lots as well you can do. Yeah, be prepared to come in, and we'll have some more information coming out today through our Aggie MBK social channels about how to get into Reed Arena as quickly as you can on Tuesday night for a 6 o'clock tip.
We're taking you around Aggieland. That is brought to you by ANCO Insurance. ANCO Insurance is a proud partner of Texas A&M Athletics and here to provide independent, client-focused, and value-driven solutions for all your insurance needs. Visit ANCO.com. Staying with the round ball, but now on the women's side, last night before a season-high, or yesterday afternoon, that is, for a season-high crowd of almost 6,500 fans, 72-66, the Aggies fall to undefeated number 3 LSU at Reed Arena. If you saw the final score, you would probably not believe me when I say that the Aggies were down 17 points in this ball game. Mm-hmm. And dealing with one of the nation's most dynamic players in Angel Reese, fought and clawed and scrapped. Ultimately, still a loss, but I mean, I was just so impressed with the effort and the fight that this team showed. I think they fed off the crowd for sure. I think they fed off a lot of the fans that threw a purple shirt on and drove down Highway 6 from Waco for that game. But that being said, again, I am constantly impressed by this team, which they would never say this, and I don't mean this as a shot at them, but like they're going to be undermanned when they play a lot of these elite SEC teams at this point in the Joni Taylor era, Tyler. But they continue to fight and claw and punch and get after it and just scrapping through a rough season. You can just see this program getting better each and every time.
Yeah, I told somebody the other day when we were talking to women's hoops is that I take this as like you hear this in football sometimes is like year one or year like this is year zero for Joni Taylor. Like the way the roster's made up, the lack of players that were on it when she got here, being able to add some key pieces. You're going against an LSU team led by Angel Reese, who's one of the three best players in the country.
Yeah.
She's had a double-double, it seems like, in every game this year. Alexis Morris has been playing. I mean, she played here for a little bit. She played at Baylor for a little bit. She's been around the game. I think she's 24. You have a point guard like that on top of that with a player who's as dynamic as Angel Reese, pretty hard to match that. But I was really pleased, especially with Sahara Jones. She had 14 yesterday, got to the line a bunch and made some shots there. The duo of Tanea Hilton and Janaya Barker, that is going to continue to grow for what Joni Taylor is trying to do. You can tell that those two players are really the key pieces for a bright future. And you know that they never gave up. You're right, Matt. They were down 17 with about, I think, like 6 minutes to go in the second quarter, end up closing the gap right before you get to halftime, outscored LSU in both quarters in the second half and had a chance to get it to one possession game a couple times. And offensively, there are some limitations to this group right now, but I thought game plan defensively, especially in the second quarter, they took some things away from LSU that they wanted to do. If you've watched Kim Mulkey coach for 20-something years, you know how they want to play. They want to pack the post. They're not going to shoot a lot of three balls. They're going to absolutely wear you out on the glass. And I thought the way Joni Taylor's bunch took the game plan to heart and did some things to literally limit LSU was pretty special.
Yeah, no, it was pretty impressive. Really proud of the way they fought and clawed for that one. Speaking of Joni Taylor, let's hear from the head coach. This is in yesterday's postgame press conference, just talking about that game and just how proud she is of this team. Here's Joni.
I think we're a different team than when we played them at the beginning of January. I think we're more confident. We had a better understanding of what it is we wanted to do. With that being said, we turned it over a ton too and gave them some opportunities. But, you know, really proud of our fight. We got down 17 at one point, and that's what the growth of this team is. And that's one thing that I am so proud of is just how we continue to fight. You know, credit to LSU. They've got really good players. They're number 3-4 team in the country for a reason. And every time we cut it close, somebody made a play. And so that's what happens when you play against elite teams. But I can't say enough how proud I am of everybody. Everybody that played at some point made a play on the offensive end or the defensive end that kept us going and kept us fighting and crawling and scratching to get back in the game.
All right, that's Joni Taylor following the Aggies. 72-66 loss to third-ranked LSU. They are off this week. Their next game is Super Bowl Sunday in Starkville, Mississippi against Mississippi State. Only two home games remain. We'll obviously get to those as we get closer to them. Both in the same week. Monday, February 20 against Missouri, and then Thursday, February 23 against Kentucky. That is it for the Aggies at home in 2023, but more to come on that as well. Now just a quick whip around Aggieland here over the weekend. First off, congrats to Tana McKay and the equestrian team. Frankly, just a beatdown of number 3 Auburn. I believe won the title last year.
Yeah,
Auburn,
defending national champs,
13-5 at the Hildebrand Equine Complex. So congrats to them on that win as they start to set themselves up for SEC seeding. That championship's coming up at the end of March. I believe it's in Georgia this year. I think it's either Georgia or South Carolina hosting that. They have one home meet remaining. Georgia Bulldogs coming here at early March. Women's tennis. Number 3 team in the nation. They continue just bulldozing opponents, which is great as they're about to head into a huge weekend coming up. We'll talk about it later in the week. The ITA National Indoors in Seattle. They actually leave tomorrow for that. Mm-hmm. They warmed up with it by just blowing Rice off their home courts down in Houston. 7-0, the final on Saturday, as the Aggies have yet to give up a point in dual match play this year as they're undefeated. Here's Mark Weaver, the head coach, by the way, following that win over Rice on Saturday.
Overall, very pleased with the performance today. We always have battles with Rice, and to come down to their home courts and beat them 7-0, couldn't be more happy with the group. This is our first kind of true road match where we played the home team, and we really embraced that. It always takes on a new feel when you play a home team, and we played really well, and I want to thank the 12th man. We had a great crowd out today, and the majority of it was a bunch of maroon whites, so appreciate the 12th man coming out and support our group today. And this will be a great as we leave for Seattle on Tuesday. We should be leaving Houston here with a lot of confidence.
So again, women's tennis on the road at the ITA Indoors this coming weekend. More on that later in the week. And finally, Tyler, women's golf. You know, we talked about the men a lot last week. We heard from Garrett Chadwell as well in last week's Studio 12s. They're all right now on the course in Orlando, round 2 of the UCF Challenge. Didn't play great, but also didn't play bad. They were fine, I think, yesterday in round 1. It was their first round of the spring, and it's kind of what you think you might see. It's kind of shake the rust off, shake the cobwebs off a little bit down there in Orlando. They're sitting in 7th, I believe.
Yeah, heading into today, they were 7th and just underway down in Orlando. So, yeah, you know, I'm not a – golfing is such a weird sport in the college side because you're obviously counting other people's scores, and you want to try to get everybody clicking on the right spot when you get to May. Be curious to see how they do in round 2 and round 3 because – it's a pretty tough spring schedule for them. They go to California twice to play out there. They play the Icon in the Golf Club of Houston at the end of the month with some really good teams coming into town. And then obviously the SEC and NCAA Regionals down the horizon. So slow build for those guys, but want to get them rolling after a really good fall. So it was good to see Zoe play really well. G talked about that with us on Friday was how key it was to kind of get her back in rhythm, I think was what he said. Yeah. She had a good fall, but felt like it could have been a little better, and she was really good on Sunday, that opening round.
Yeah, you know, Chadwell, he is a man of many talents. We put him to work. Not only is he coaching the team, he is now our correspondent out in Orlando. He harvested us a little sound. Just quickly give you a little women's golf flair here. Here is Zoe Slaughter followed by Haley Cooper talking about yesterday's rounds in the UCF Challenge. Zoe, after day one, was ninth in the tournament. She went 4 under 68. Haley, 22nd in the tournament. She went 2 under 70. So our two top finishers, Zoe followed by Haley, after yesterday's round one.
Yeah, my putting was pretty good. Ball striking well. I mean, everything was pretty much going together. The wind wasn't too harsh out there today, and the conditions were nice, so everything was clicking together.
Yeah, it started off a little bit rusty, but kind of got the ball striking back together, and I started hitting a lot of fairways and greens. I just couldn't get a bunch of the putts to fall today, so hopefully tomorrow they'll fall. But whenever I did, you know, I hit a green within 15 feet. It was kind of automatic birdie once I got it rolling. So.
Okay, that's women's golf, and that will do it for this episode of Around Aggieland, but the podcast is not complete yet.
We got the head softball coach first time on the podcast.
Yeah, she let us come talk to her. She didn't lock the door of the office and let us come say hi.
She didn't say, oh, well, I'm going to be around these two guys a lot over the next 56 games. But no, dive in with Trisha before we talk all things softball as they get ready to play on Thursday night, as they get ready to play against Tarleton on Thursday night, Davis Diamond. It was a good conversation. Talked about some of the things they've done in their transition from Arizona State with a good mix of returners, but a pretty, I like to call it, dynamic group of newcomers, probably led by Julia Cottrell, the transfer catcher from Oklahoma State. Emily Levitt in the circle, the transfer pitcher from Minnesota, and a lot of the freshmen they brought in, I think we could really see a lot of over the next 4 months. So exciting time. Excited to see the brand of softball they play, and she'll dive into that a little bit too about what to expect out of this group in 2023.
Yeah, and quickly on that note, the first ever Aggie Softball Hour radio show will debut tomorrow night, Tuesday night, at Rudy's in College Station, 7 o'clock. Is the start of that. So we've got three radio shows for you this week at Rudy's. Tonight at 7, the Buzz Williams radio show. And then tomorrow at 6, right before softball, will be the Joni Taylor radio show. So men's basketball radio show tonight at 7 on Monday. And then Tuesday, 6 o'clock, Joni Taylor. 7 o'clock, Aggie softball, Trisha Ford. All of those will be available on the podcast. Love to see anyone in town out at Rudy's for that. You can also watch it on the respective sports Facebook pages and inside the 12-man mobile app. So that'll do it for this edition of Around Aggieland. And now, Tyler and I's conversation with head softball coach Trisha Ford. See, before we got started here, we were talking food. That's what we already know. We're going to be best friends with Trisha here because we just dive right into the food conversation.
The good stuff.
The food conversation. That's going to be the fun part when we're on the road, is to see how this the food thing works here. Because, you know, you're there to win games. You're there to help the team. But also, there's, you know, you got to eat when you're there, right?
You do.
Trisha Ford, head softball coach, with us here on Studio 12. Happy game week.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not sleeping very much, you know. Excited to get going.
Yeah, it's you've told me about how, you know, you'll put in a ton of the hours. The prep is such a big thing for you. Does it ramp up for you? And I know you've told us that you've done a bunch of hours even in the offseason, but when you hit game week, do you fall into more of a rinse and repeat sort of routine type thing, or how does that work for you as you ramp up into each game week?
Yeah, they look very similar, to be honest with you. And so just getting our scouting stuff done and prepared for the team for our presentation. We won't give them all the information, but for me as a pitch caller and obviously managing the game, that piece, knowing the ins and outs, and these tournaments provide, it's a little difficult because you're prepping for, you know, 4 to 5 different opponents a weekend. So but yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's the good stuff.
Does it feel like, I can't do the math in my head, it's probably 8 or 9 months since you took this job, does it feel like it's absolutely flown by?
Absolutely, yes, 100%, yes. But in a good way. I feel like if it hasn't flown by, that means that it's been a little stressful. And, you know, I feel like you get into a rhythm, you get into a routine. Softball is softball, and I've really loved my time here.
Coach, you talking about the 8 or 9 months being here. It has felt like a whirlwind since you were announced. In the summer, you immediately hit the road recruiting, and this is a team that's a good mix of returners, but it's a good mix, mix of newcomers. Can you talk about all the kind of the pieces that you had to put together to get the puzzle ready to go for 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously when you take over a program, there's going to be some transition and, you know, you anticipate that piece and you want to also bring in some pieces that you think are really important. And I just think, you know, Coach Evans did a great job of recruiting just stand-up people in the program, and I feel like we brought in a good handful. I mean, I think we brought in 8 or 9, you know, newcomers, whether it be incoming freshmen that were already recruited, some incoming freshmen that were coming with me, and then obviously some transfer portal players. And I just think it took us a little bit of time, but I will really commend the returners of welcoming in the newbies, welcoming us in. I mean, that's just a lot of transition for an 18 to 22 year old. And I don't know. I was really impressed, but I feel like that's what Texas A&M is all about. It's those types of people that are, I don't know, intrigued and drawn to this place, are just really top notch, you know, people. But the transition's been really, really smooth.
And the returnees, you know, we heard from Rylan Wiggins, Trinity Cannon in a press conference on Saturday, and just hearing them talk about, because, you know, especially in this era of the transfer portal where maybe it's easier than ever to go ahead and, you know, hey, this wasn't the coach that recruited me, I'm going to go ahead and go play somewhere else. Them, along with the others that are still here, have really embraced the change. And that's really not easy even for us as adults, much less, you know, 20-year-old kids. How proud are you of the returners that have decided to stick it out and move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it says a lot about who they are. And, you know, always going back to parents, I mean, I think it says a lot about their parents, right? I don't know. I think Texas A&M, getting that degree, getting that Aggie ring is huge. I think there's a lot of layers when you leave Texas A&M without getting your degree that maybe you just think about. There's, you know, and I think, you know, hopefully they were excited, and they were, to have me. And obviously, you know, practice is different and it looks different, but they've really enjoyed it. And it's been hard. And, you know, that's one of my things. Like, you got to love the hard, because if you don't love the hard, then you're not going to enjoy the easy, you know. And we want games to be easy, and we're going to have ups and downs, and we know that. But I really want them to embrace the hard, because choosing the hard is always the right way to do it.
Yeah, and you could also tell, too, that, I mean, and it was a regional team last year, so it wasn't like they didn't win games, but
absolutely,
you could tell hearing them talk, and even outside of the press thing, they're hungry to take that next step, move it up a notch, and they are, I wouldn't even say they're cautiously excited about this year. They're pumped about the future. Can't you tell that out of this group?
Yeah, I enjoy them, honestly. I always say, like, I'm a little spicy, right? I like a little spice. And I think this team wants to play with some spice, you know. I love having a chip on my shoulder. I love kind of preparing as the underdog and just getting to a dogfight. And I think this team is, you know, prepared and as much as we possibly can, and they're ready to take out that energy onto another opponent.
Let's dive into some position groups. Let's talk Coach Ford's favorite, the pitchers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's your background. You've got a really good returner in Emily Kennedy. You brought in two really good pieces in Emily Levitt and Madison Preston, who played for Arizona State. And you got Grace Uribe and Shaylee Ackerman back. But one of the things you talked about with us a couple weeks ago was the technology part of trying to make them better mechanically, seeing how they're using their hand and their fingers to throw, get the ball spinning in the right place where it needs to go. Kind of break all five of those down for us and the things you started with day one of the fall to get them to ready to go now in February.
Yeah, let's talk with my lefty magic. I always tell her, I call her lefty because we have two Emilys, so she's my lefty, yeah. And she, you know, I said, you know, you always joke as a coach, like, I want to, or you're not left-handed throwing 70, and I'm like, you're my lefty throwing 70. Like, I'll take you, check, you know. But we just kind of cleaned up her motion. She's a little bit more consistent off the mound. Obviously, I think that everything starts from the beginning. So if your beginning's a little wonky, then it's going to set your body up into being in a good position to be able to control the ball. So she's cleaned up her beginning motion. A lot of our pitchers here had a lot of upper, I don't know, pre-motion, I would say wasted movement. So we kind of got rid of all of that above our head movement. And it works for some people. We just, when we kind of looked at our biomechanics and how things worked, we thought that that was not really necessary and just taking energy away. So with Emily, we've really worked on her just getting into her load, getting to a better hinge, and staying a little bit straighter off the mound. She tends to like to turn off the mound, which doesn't set her in a great angle when she gets ready to release the ball. So She's done a great job. All of them have, honestly, have just taken us in. But I think when you bring in technology and you bring in new ideas, like, I don't force feed them. And I think that's huge. It's obviously, developing that relationship with your pitchers is something that I take a lot of pride in. But we sit down and we go over everything and we come up with a plan that they're comfortable with, I'm comfortable with. And then they're part of the decision making instead of me throwing it at them and throwing it at them. So I think that's why we get a lot of buy-in so quickly, is because we just show them, like, hey, this is what it's, you know, telling us. But Shaylee Ackerman, I mean, you talk about somebody that has dynamic movement as well. So she's, you know, she's another one plus 65. So she's 68-ish with, you know, really good spin. We're working on her spin direction, but we cleaned up her motion as well. All of them have been at the beginning. And Grace Ruby has been the same way. So she started off this fall working at about 61 to 63, hitting 63, but pretty consistently at 62. And she's now back up to about 65. So that huge increase in velo. And that's just really cleaning up her mechanics, cleaning up. I mean, she's super athletic. She hits, she plays outfield. So she's super athletic, and we've been able to get some up tick with her on her rise ball. So it's, you know, everything's not sinking. So she's been able to kind of separate between the up and down, which is just increasing that, you know, miss rate. So that's been good. Her motion has changed significantly. So those of you that have seen her previously will notice a change. And then the two kids that kind of came with me, Madison Preston started off in Alabama and then came to ASU and then took some time off. She's just a very mechanically sound pitcher. So I'll be honest with you, when she came from Bama, we fixed some things, or addressed some things, I should say. And I didn't really touch her a whole lot this fall. She moves really well. We just got her stronger and got her into game shape and made sure we had a goal of having, you know, at least 120 at bats this fall that she's faced. So we far exceeded that, so we could get some good data on her. So she's going to be fun to watch. She's definitely a different pitcher than everybody else. So she's left-handed, but she's down, and her strength is not her velo. Her strength, and she's fine velo wise, but she has about 10 inches of sink, both changeup and drop ball, and that's a nightmare for a hitter. So that's, and she's going to blend well with our hard throwers. And then Emily Levitt is our last pitcher, and she transferred in from Minnesota, and I watched her a lot when she played, kind of, we call it travel ball, but her youth throughout her high school years. And I actually was going to recruit her, but we didn't need a pitcher. She was just somebody that played for a hard-nosed coach that played at a high level, and she's super competitive and has those natural leadership qualities that I really admire in someone. And so she's another one, though. You think that she's this little 5'6", 5'7", and she's bringing it at 68. So we're going to be fun. Yeah. So I could talk for hours about pitching. No. Sorry. Yes.
But it's funny because, you know, for years it was just, hey, everybody's got one horse. They're going to throw the ball out there. Yeah. They're going to get the ball. You guys have a complete staff, and that's how the game has changed rapidly in the last, for sure, 5 years, but maybe even 10. There's the Kalani Ricketts and the Jenny Finches and the Monica Abbotts of the world. They just really don't exist anymore. And that's how you've had to build a staff, is to find the right pieces in the right spots so you can do certain things really well.
Absolutely. And we have a good balance of lefty and righty matchup. So I 100% agree. It's going to be a staff. And you look at, you know, most programs in, you know, even in the World Series and in postseason, there's at least 2 to 3 kids that can really help, you know, you win ball games. Yeah. So.
And it's always funny to me, I better not say it too loud so Coach Harger doesn't hear, because, you know, in the way the game is, you feel like shifted so far to the hitting. At the end of the day, when you see the results in the World Series, you might have some big numbers here and there, but it's pitching and defense that's going to really win championships, isn't it? Even that, after 20 years.
It is. It is still a pitcher's game. So I always say, which him and I argue about, a good pitcher beats a good hitter every day. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned data, and I think it's interesting because nowadays, and you guys had this at ASU with the Pac-12, every dang pitch is on tape. So the hitters are ingesting all this data. It's hard in a way, I would think, for a pitcher to surprise a hitter because they would have seen so much on tape. But you all sort of flipping the script a little bit and giving the pitchers all this data, if they choose to invest in it, can help them attack hitters as well, can it?
Absolutely. Well, and I wish, I'm going to go on my little soapbox, that our strike zone would get cleaned up.
Yeah.
Because there's no longer a strike zone above the waist. So it's a very small. So you want to know why our game has become so offensive? Well, because the strike zone has shrunk in half, you know, honestly. So, but yeah, we absolutely will attack hitters. And obviously the off speed is really big for me. So all of our pitchers will have an off speed, because I think, you know, hitting is all about pitch selection and timing. And so if we can disrupt that piece, then you're going to be all right.
I think Tyler's favorite, John Smoltz, mentioned that about the strike zone and the baseball. They were talking about this, the length of game. He's like, you want to fix the speed of the game real quick? He said, you make the strike zone the size it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's not really rocket science. Yeah.
On to offense. You know, this is a team that's going to have some kids back. Also, you all have added some key pieces as well. Maybe you don't have to necessarily go around the diamond, but let's start with some of the familiar faces that people will remember. The Trinity Cannons. Well, Bree Warren is somewhat familiar, but she was out last year. The Rylan Wiggins. That kind of squad that we saw, Coco Woolley, some of the kids, Morgan Smith as well, some of the returning, which you would call starters.
Yeah. Let's start with Morgan. Morgan is just, she's just a quiet worker. And it has taken me a little while to understand her. And I feel like her to maybe understand us. But she's really come around, I feel like, since we've been back in January. And we didn't really fuss with her much because, I mean, she's done a really good job, you know, up to this point. So this is her last year. So it's like, all right, Mo, you go do your thing, you know. Defensively, we've worked with her quite a bit and trying to get her to do some things. But I don't know. She's just one of the most, she can let a ball get so deep and still be able to hit it with power. And she's just very calm in the box, which I think is really impressive. So she'll be fun, you know, to continue to watch. Rylan Wiggins, I mean, she's a defensive superstar. She's one of the best defensive players, obviously on our team, but that I've coached. I mean, that she can cover ground. She's got a great understanding of the game and knowing what to do with the play. She's been a super, I mean, she's been a leader on the field for us. And offensively, she's been working hard with Coach Harger, just trying to get her posture and her hinge a little bit better, and just staying in her posture while she swings is going to be something that we're working hard with her. And but yeah, she's somebody that obviously, you know, brings a little juice to us, but is a pretty consistent, you know, hitter in our lineup. Coco is, I mean, just a dynamic. She's an athlete. And I think sometimes what coaches do is you try to tame that. And really in our system, we're going to let her be Coco. And so we're going to let her be athletic. She's somebody that you can't overcoach, because if she starts thinking, she loses her athleticism. And so she'll slap. She this year is going to hit a lot more than probably last year previously. She's got some juice. I mean, she can run. She's dynamic on the bases. She can bunt. So I don't know. I'm excited to kind of see her add that to her toolbox, is what I would say. And Bree Warren, I mean, good Lord, she can hit the ball a country mile. I mean, she's so strong. Excited to, you know, have her, you know, battling for some positions, you know, out in the outfield, but obviously in the box, she's pretty special. And another one, though, that just, she can miss hit a ball, hit at 230. I mean, it's just, it's kind of crazy. But she's, you know, doing a great job of, you know, just allowing us to coach her and kind of taking in new concepts and being able to feel things. And, you know, Coach Harger's worked with her with some different things with her stride. And I don't know, it's just, you know, once they start to see things and see oh, that's making sense, or they can see the result, you get more and more buy-in. And that's why really that technology piece is important, because it's not my opinion. It's actually what the ball is telling you, or what the ball flight is telling you. So they're pretty good. Yeah.
You got an interesting mix of newcomers, and it all starts with Julia Cottrell offensively.
Yeah.
How important is it? Matt and I will tell you, we'll be blunt honest here. Catching has not been a strength of this program the last couple of years, and
she's one of the best.
One of the best in the country,
literally,
offensively and defensively. How big is that? I mean, the old saying is, how strong are you up the middle? You put somebody like that behind the plate, the sky's the limit.
That was a huge pickup for us, honestly. And she, you know, I throw BP, so not real pitching, to our hitters, and she will frame a pitch for me. And I'm like, as a pitcher, you're just like, man, she's going to get me that pitch. Like, she's going to get me that pitch. And to hear the pitchers being excited, especially our returners, of like, they love throwing to Julia. And I think that's one of your biggest compliments as a catcher, is when you're sitting up there and they're fighting over who gets Julia, you know what I mean, to catch. And she's just, honestly, she's one of the most humble kids And people don't think that about her, but she, like, even after the media thing, I was talking to her after our men's basketball game, and she's like, "Coach, like, that's not my, you know, I don't love doing that. I don't like talking about me. Like, I just want to go out and play, and I just want to be Julia and play softball." And I think you hear that a lot from really, you know, I think the great ones, right? The great softball players, they enjoy the game so much from their core, and they just want to go out and play. And she really wants to just help this team be better. She's a great teammate. I mean, she's transitioned well. I've known Julia since her sophomore year, I think we figured out. So, you know, I just think she has made mistakes and she realizes that and she's learned from it. She's also got the short end of some things too and how she's responded. And I don't know, I'm just super proud of her, to be honest with you. And I'm excited to see her finish her career. She has 2 years on a high note and obviously here in Aggieland.
Yeah, you've got some of the newcomers, as he said. You've got some more transfers in there. We don't have to go through the entire roster. I know Allie Enright is one that you think you might be counting on for some numbers out there. And then some of the freshmen, I'm going to forget some people, obviously, but then Ayanna Coleman and Amari Harper, some of these kids that either were with you at ASU as a recruit coming over here or kids that were committed to Texas A&M and coming here. But you look like you've got some nice depth in that space to be able to do some things.
Yeah, we are really excited. I mean, and I think, you know, the one thing I've talked to some of these position players, especially freshmen, is like, listen, not everybody's going to play this first game. Like, don't freak out. Like, it's a long season, you know, because we have a lot of talent and they're young, honestly. And so you have Keely Williams, who's an outfielder. She was, you know, already committed to A&M, and I think she's going to be very special. She's very mature. Her in the box, calm. She doesn't really get super high or super low, and she'll be somebody that you see out in the outfield quite a bit. Allie Enright, we mentioned before, is somebody who, you know, transferred in from Arizona, also played in a travel ball organization that I'm very familiar with and have known them for a long, long time. And, you know, somebody that her and Riley Valentine, if I were going to give, like, the award of who's worked the hardest and really just – I don't know, outworked anybody and everybody, those two would be it. I mean, Riley Valentine is up at 6 a.m. every day hitting. Her parents have made a hitting facility out here, and so she hits out here at their house and, you know, studying the game. And Allie Enright's the same way. You know, she's here at the cages, you know, late at night. She's coming in and getting extra work. And, you know, to me, it's really exciting to see those pieces come together for those that put in that work. Because here's the reality. I'm like, you can outwork and outwork and outwork, but here's the difference at college. Like, you got to beat somebody out. And that's, you know, sometimes life isn't fair, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't know. I'm excited. Ayanna Coleman, she's obviously a local kid from College Station. She cleared the scoreboard a couple times during our fall games. I don't know. I think that, you know, the future is bright, and we're gonna surprise some people.
You are gonna surprise some people, but you're gonna get tested early.
Absolutely.
It's this weekend, 6 home games is great, but then you hit the road for 2 pretty premier tournaments.
Yep.
I think all 10 or 9 of the 10 teams played in a regional last year.
Yep.
It's going to be it's a group that's logged a lot of innings, but it's going to be a competitive team that's going to have to face a really bunch of competitive teams in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, but that's what this is about, right? Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're going to have bumps, and I 100% know that that's going to happen, but how you respond to those bumps, I think, is really important and really kind of sets the stage. And, you know, I think back to last year, and, you know, nobody thought that, you know, ASU was going to contend for a Pac-12 title or do the things that we did. And we hit bumps, like, you know, every team does, but how do you respond to those? And how do you, you know, kind of react to them? And do you just put your head back down and go to work? And that's something that we kind of bring here. Is I'm not a big goal person. So I don't sit down before the year and be like, okay, we're going to be this, you know, this many wins and this many losses. And for me, it's more about, you know, can we execute 2-2 counts? Can we work 2 of 3 first pitch strikes? I'm going back to my pitching brain, you know. We need to reduce our strikeouts. So how are we doing that? Some strike recognition work, those types of things. And I think obviously being tested will be good because, hey, we want to be there. We want to be hosting. This is what it looks like. This is who we have to beat. This is how we have to go through it. And obviously they know conference, right? And they know that they're going to play great teams and great programs. But I think to face that early on in the year is going to help us, only help us at the end, you know, of season.
And doing it on the road, too, I think is a big deal,
absolutely,
right? I mean, because you get the team on the road, they bond. I mean, how much, yeah, at ASU, you all would do maybe a road trip in the, because of, I mean, who doesn't want to be in the desert in February? It's amazing. I love it. I'm right there with you. But you didn't have to necessarily go on the road as much. So how big is it physically taking this group on the road and seeing sort of how they gel?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And we actually went on the road a little bit more last year, and I think it helped us because we had to play in snowy weather. And
that was us. My bad. Not here, but
yeah,
90 miles west.
It was in the state of Texas. Yeah, we'll leave it at that. Yeah. So, but I think that really helped us because we had to win, you know, at Oregon. It was cold, wet, and rainy in May. Same thing with Washington, which that's also another, you know, mm-hmm, cold, wet, and rainy in May. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. And so, I don't know. I just think the road brings a different element. You have to bring your own energy. You have to bring your own routine. And not that you have to bring your own routine, but you have to, like, practice it. It doesn't feel comfortable. You're not in your bed. You're not. And so I think when you start to understand how to win on the road, how to win in neutral sites, I think you have a recipe for success.
You may not have thought of it this way, but did you play in Clearwater at ASU?
No, we didn't. So this is my first time. I played there with USA a lot.
Okay.
But no, gotcha. Not.
Yeah, because we have not either. But mm-hmm, I'm wondering if you like the fact, and maybe you haven't thought this far ahead, that ESPN treats this like a mini World Series. You know, there's banners everywhere, all these cameras. The biggest talent that's calling the games are going to be there for the kids. And they're used to it to a degree, I would think, playing in the SEC. But that experience so early in the season, got to be big.
It's huge. Our own Amanda Scarborough will be there.
We've heard this rumor.
I'm excited. Her and I, we always get lost in the pitching discussion. So, and I think Tori's going to call some of our games too. So that's always neat to have. But I think it's good for the freshmen, honestly, if I'm being, and just the newbies of just being in that environment, being in that excitement. I don't know. You just can't really recreate it. And so I think it really helps you prepare for conference and then obviously postseason, and we're gonna, you know, you're gonna have to at some point win on the road in postseason or win at a neutral site, but whether it be, you know, Oklahoma City, which some may argue is not really a neutral site for some, but we'll leave that there. Yeah. But I mean, I think that, you know, it's just gonna help us, and that's the biggest thing. And Palm Springs is very similar. Yep. It's a big time tournament that I am pretty familiar with, and ESPN will come out there as well and do some interviews, and it's just great for our sport too. Yeah. And to give back to those kids being able, and we're going to be lucky this year that we get to kind of see you talk from a recruiting standpoint, the East Coast and the West Coast, and be able to hit those. And you know, maybe there's some girls out there that have never really understood or seen Texas A&M softball, and they're going to be able to be exposed to that, and our great roster and our traditions and those types of things. So that part is also exciting.
Last thing before we let you go, this weekend, I always like asking coaches this. Obviously, you want to win 6 games. I get that. Put that aside. What do you want to get out of this weekend here at the Texas A&M Invitational?
Yeah, I want us to go through, and I think we will, some hard things. You know, like, I think you might get some thumbers thrown at us or some weird motions thrown at us that's not just very comfortable. And you might get some that, you know, throw a different miles per hour than maybe our comfort zone is. And how are we going to scrap through? And, you know, can we use some of our short game? Can we, you know, use some of our speed? Can we put pressure on defense? Those types of things. I enjoy the struggles, to be honest with you. And I enjoy, you know, pitching, like, you know, putting us, you know, we'll put our pitchers in some pressure situations, and how are they going to respond to that? And, you know, I want to hear our energy. I want to feel our energy. I want to, you know, our focus. And I don't really care who we're playing on the other side. Like, it's about us, and it's always about us and our bubble, and making sure that that's where our heads are.